T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Folks, Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc., joins us as he does every Wednesday, and we appreciate same. Michael, welcome to the show.
Noel, thank you for having me, my friend, on this this rain's meant to bring flowers, right?
Yeah, Cinco de Mayo, a little damp today. What are you doing on Cinco de Mayo, Michael?
I'm going to follow in the grand New Orleans tradition and get Cinco de Mayo'd, right?
Exactly.
No, I'm actually driving up to Baton Rouge to go walk the legislature as soon as I get off the phone with you. So I'm going to need some tequila when I get back, but I'm going to hold off until I make it home again.
Well, they might understand a little better if you have that tequila on the front end as opposed to the back end. But
you know,
you don't need to comment on that, Michael. we'll just leave it at there. Leave it right there. I'm sorry.
I'll let you be my lips. Thanks.
There you go.
For me.
So you headed up today. A lot of issues. A lot of things are really kind of starting to take shape at the legislature. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, you know, I have to say, Noel, amidst all of the strange and distressing and nonsensical things that are happening, overall, I think that our legislature, this year has been more proactive, has been more, I think, optimistic in driving for change, less cynical than I've ever seen. And even if we don't agree with all of the bills that are moving, there's a sense, I think, of trying to get things done for Louisiana. So there are a few things that are happening. First, the governor has delineated how the first $1.6 billion in American Rescue Plan funding is going to be spent. And it seems to make a lot of sense. He's saying that $400 million is going to go to replenish the unemployment trust fund so that businesses don't get hit. $230 million will then pay the loan back to the government. $400 million will go towards infrastructure, things like bridges and roads. Another $300 million will go towards water and sewer systems, which we know we need so badly. Really critically, you got about $145 million going to tourism and culture because, of course, that's the sector that's been hit so badly, and that's so important for us here in this region. And then $50 million for ports, which are kind of the original economic sector of New Orleans. So, you know, just personally, I see that list and I say, okay, makes good sense to me. And, of course, there's going to be another $1.6 coming down. And that, as we know, we can talk about this later, that's just the first tranche or the first nation state in the money map that's coming out of the Fed. But I like to look, you know, the governor's priorities there.
So how has the legislature embraced those? I understand that there are some points that, you know, there's a little bit more friction than others. My reaction to what the governor outlined, the same as yours, I thought very forward-leaning, very strategic in his approach. Where do we end up with the legislative body?
You know, I know that I've heard about there being some pushback and questions of issues of control. I'm not exactly sure technically exactly how that works, but when I kind of am talking to legislators and talking to Ileana, who's up at the Capitol right now, I'm just not hearing a lot of pushback on the governor and his priorities on this or anything else right now. There are other things that are generating some, you know, heat and discussion, but I'm just not hearing a lot. And so whatever the technicalities are about exactly that gets approved by the legislature, I'm just not hearing a lot of problems about it. I do know that the funds, Newell, are generally going to be given out on a reimbursement basis. That's how there's going to be a control mechanism for them. So you spend the funds, and then you get reimbursed by the state. But overall, it seems that folks are pretty copacetic with that set of priorities.
I happen to like that approach because there's a little accountability. There's some control over this where you just don't simply run amok spending dollars with individuals and organizations that you don't necessarily need to, because there's always the chance that there may be pushback and some of the funds may be held back.
Yeah, it does create a control. And I think it does make people pause and understand that whatever they spend is going to have to be scrutinized to be reimbursed. And the only reason that you wouldn't want that is if there were a cash flow issue with, you know, with the parishes or with the entities that spend it. But with so much other money that's coming down, for example, the $350 billion that's going directly to the parishes and the cities, that doesn't seem like that's going to be a challenge. And so everybody that I've talked to so far likes that. And then there's some other nice things that we're seeing happen at the state capitol. On the infrastructure side, although we're not going to get a gas tax right now because there's too much money coming down from the feds for infrastructure, Paula Davis does have a bill that would use some of the existing state sales tax and would dedicate that towards a transportation trust fund out to 2031, which we like. There's some talk about some fees on electric and hybrid vehicles, which are growing, that would also go towards a construction subfund of the TTF. There's another bill that would use the proceeds of the motor vehicle sales tax. All this is to say that the legislature, even though it's clear that politically we're not going to get a renewal of the gas tax done, which was first done in 1984, there are other mechanisms for improving roads and bridges that are being looked at. Relatedly, in transport, there's a bill by Senator Jimmy Harris that would create a Louisiana import tax credit of $50 per TEU. It's modeled on programs they have all over in Alabama and in Georgia. But it's so important for us because we've got this real trade imbalance. We are 70% exports, largely agriculture. And what that means is that it's harder for us to have enough container balance because we don't have enough imports coming in. And that's really a consequence of us not having the population, right, of a Houston or an Atlanta. So this incentive would help kind of mitigate that imbalance and give us more containers coming in that we can then use to go out. So we like that bill. That one seems to be moving through the Senate. He has another bill on criminal justice, which would basically give DAs more discretion if a crime was committed. We talked about this with a handgun. And that one, I think, just passed off the Senate floor 34-0. So it's being supported on a bipartisan basis as a common sense safety measure. Ted James out of Baton Rouge has a different criminal justice bill that basically says if you have done your time and you are eligible to have your public-facing record expunged so you can go back and start working again and not get rejected, it makes that process easier, and that also is getting good support. So, you know, those are looking good. Early childhood, we're still pushing to get some money put in the budget, about $86 million for early childhood and or to have sports betting directed towards early childhood. Haven't succeeded there yet, but on a bipartisan basis, everybody recognizes, that. And then the last stuff, Newell, is just this tax reform stuff where there's a bill that would flatten corporate rate, take it from 8% down to 6.5%. On the personal income tax, we've talked about that there's some bills that are going through that would take the brackets down from 6% to 4.25%, I think, is the current level in exchange for getting rid of federal deductibility. But that would also have to go to a vote of the people in the fall. And you know, like we've talked about, convincing everybody that this is a good deal and a better one than they have today is frankly going to be, you know, an uphill battle. And then sales tax is, past the House, streamlining, and it's going over. So, you know, net, Noel, you think about past years, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on, and it feels like people are trying to be constructive. So I might need one shot less of tequila than I usually.
Yeah. Michael, there was some discussion and talk about the necessity possibly of a special session because some of these initiatives and proposals were getting a little bogged down. What's the latest there?
You know, I haven't heard that, but let me do this. I'm going to text Ileana, who's in the bowels of the Capitol right now, and ask her what the whisper campaign is on that one. She's in the belly of the beast, and I'll have a report to you before the top of the hour. I have not heard that down here, but I'm slightly insulated because I'm not in the Capitol every day right now. So let me just I'm going to use my lifeline.
You're gonna, lifeline. He's got a lifeline. Yeah. There you go. Let's take a break while you exercise. Lifeline, and we'll be right back with Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc. We are back with Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc., who's just exercised his lifeline to Ileana. And the answer is?
I've actually got two answers for you. That was an extraordinary pause for me. My IQ went up about 10 points. First answer. No, you're like Aaron Rodgers on Jeopardy now. First answer is that there is talk about a special session around taxes, as well as some budget and federal money issues. It would happen right after the regular session, so kind of an extender. That's my final answer.
Okay.
And bonus round is that my understanding is that it looks like the legislature does have approval purview over how the federal money is spent, so it has to be done in coordination and cooperation with the governor.
On the text line, Michael, it's folks are saying that you and I sound like two socialists, taking credit for all of this money. I mean, look, the reality is we may have had some disagreements over, you know, how much and where and stuff, but now we have a fiduciary obligation to spend this money strategically. I mean, the Congress passed it. It is what it is. You don't stare it in the face and shun it. You try to leverage it to the best of your ability, right?
Well, that's right. So I think they're two very separate questions. The question of how much stimulus we should be sending and if the $7.3 trillion that's coming down right now is appropriate or smart for the country is a very real question, and it's one. But this is happening, and there is going to be some number of trillions that's spent. So then our fiduciary, our political, our community responsibility is to make sure that those funds are spent in the way which returns the best amount for the future generations of Louisianians, and not to do so based on I guess making a point would be cutting off our nose to spite our face, and that doesn't make any sense. So I do agree, and you know, we have this money map we've put together, and the amount of funds that are coming out of D.C. are breathtaking, but they are coming down. And so not to leverage them for things like infrastructure that we so desperately need, or for topping up the unemployment trust fund so that we don't have to raise taxes on businesses, or for creating more early childhood education, not doing that, that would be an abdication of responsibility and just not dealing with the reality that we're in right now.
Breaking news, a national eviction moratorium has just been thrown out by a federal judge. That battle continues. It'll be interesting to see where that ultimately ends up.
Yeah, you know, that discussion has been difficult from the beginning because while, of course, there's sympathy for people that have lost their jobs, particularly in Louisiana because of all the hospitality, the part that was lost in that up front is that most landlords are small owners. And even if there's nobody paying rent, they're still responsible for utilities and taxes and insurance. And they're small business people as well. I know that there was some funding that came down that, again, eventually was meant to help landlords as well. But what we really need is just to get people back into work and get people paying their rent and get the system, working again.
Michael, President Biden's going to come down. I think he's going to be at the Carrollton pump station, if my memory serves me correct. Importance the same?
I think, when he came down here and I heard that he was going to go and visit Sewer and Water Board, I was really pleased because of all the ways that we could use these funds in a way that is going to support the future of Southeast Louisiana and this region, using it to shore up our water system, our pumps, our power, our clean drinking water gallery, in my mind, is probably the most fundamental. Because if that fails, and the risk now, Newell, is not, you know, what I say, you know, death from the sea, which is what Katrina was. Now it's death from above, right? It's stormwater coming down, and the inability to handle that, kind of like what happened to Houston with Harvey. If that happened here, it's a very bad situation. And so the fact that he's going to highlight that the fund should be used for basic infrastructure like that, I think is right on point. So I'm pleased with that. Then he's going to go over and he's going to talk in Lake Charles. I assume he's going to stand in front of a bridge, the bridge there on I-10, and talk about fixing the bridge. And, you know, I think it's difficult to argue with either of those priorities. You tell me if I'm missing something here, but they seem real solid.
No, there's no doubt. I mean, you know, you and I have talked about this before. This money is a sum of money. It's not going to cure all ills. There's still going to need to be the political leadership, the political will, the ability to consume political capital in order to prioritize things in an appropriate fashion to continue to be able to fund the maintenance and upkeep of infrastructure. And unfortunately, in the short term, I just hope that we don't lose sight of that. And my suspicion is that we will. This is an election year for folks here in the city, and this is when their voice is heard the most and can be the loudest. And I just hope we're not completely distracted by all this money.
Well, there's a disconnect. There's a real asymmetry between relief money and long-term maintenance and support because of just the nature of political cycles, like you said. And so what we don't want to do, and I'll give you kind of two examples post-Katrina. You know, one is that we got a lot of money to rebuild schools, but there wasn't money for maintaining them. So we build these gorgeous multi-million dollar facilities, but now maintaining them is going to mean watering and feeding, you know, white elephants. And the other is that we did some things which looked good at the time. You could talk about like the Make It Right project in the Lower Nine because it looked great in a rendering, but it wasn't done in a way that was sustainable and appropriate, you know, for the community. And so a lot of, you know, I asked a very well-known, very well-published demographer and economist here what we should be using the money for that would be transformative. And he used a four-letter word that I can't say on a family show like yours, Newell, but he basically said no fancy blah. He said put it into basics that we need that are going to help us be productive in the future. And you know, did you see, Newell, that Apple said they were going to put in a new facility, a manufacturing facility in North Carolina, Research Triangle Park, $1 billion, 3,000 jobs?
Yeah, I did.
So that just came down, and people said, man, you know, what do we do to make that happen here? And what people have to realize is that Research Triangle Park was started in 1959. Mm-hmm. It is a 60-year-old project that failed for the first 20 years. But there was a vision to bring in public investment combined with the universities and sustain that over time, and that now has resulted in transforming from tobacco fields to tech jobs. And so I think what people have to understand is that you have to make these investments with a generational perspective if you really want to you know, do the right thing for maybe not even your kids, Noel, maybe it's your grandkids.
Michael, I assume you saw the Wall Street Journal article about expecting a summer boom in the city. I was just in South Florida for 7 days. There's no shortage on their economy down there. I was absolutely blown away by what not only I saw but what I experienced. You know, the dining, just how crowded things were. I mean, it is blowing and going in South Florida.
It's blowing and going in South Florida. You know, people have been over there and over the past few months, including myself. I was over on 30A. I wasn't in South Florida. I was in the Panhandle. But, you know, you come back saying, you know, what COVID? Because it was just rolling. But in general, you know, what we're going to see here, there have been some people have been saying, oh, you know, it's going to be slow for the economy to come back. And there's some things which will be slower, like business conventions, no doubt, right? Or yeah, business travel on airlines. But in general, there are two facts that are out there. One is massive pent-up emotional demand for intimacy, for socializing, and for culture, which is kind of like the that's the whole thing that we have here in South Louisiana. And the second is that folks have more money, more discretionary money than they've ever had. Net incomes actually went up during COVID because people weren't spending on things like travel and they were getting things like relief checks and enhanced unemployment. So the result of this is not going to be a hospitality industry that slowly comes back. It's going to be a hospitality industry that's beset with a different problem, which is that demand is going to really outstrip supply, particularly of labor. And I've been talking to restaurateurs, and I talk about our restaurant that I still own a tiny bit of out in San Francisco, and the challenge is just finding staff, because it was a challenge before COVID. Now you have folks who have gone on to different careers. You have folks that are saying, I don't need to work right now because I'm still getting relief money. So you're going to see a lot of bonuses for line cooks. You're going to see a lot of owners that are out there serving tables. And probably the net result of it, once it all kind of settles out, is that the cost of, getting a plate of protein in a restaurant is probably going to go up, because it's going to flow down from, to the restaurants, to wages, and then out to the customers, I think.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I was at a famous hotel down in Key West. Four mini conventions going on in that hotel at one time. So I think that the demand is there. The yearn is there. And they've figured out a way to accommodate same. And I'm just kind of curious if we're going to be as innovative, because I heard the mayor the other day talk about wanting to get to a 75% vaccination rate. That's a pretty aggressive target. I get it. But to hold back what could potentially happen in October, and now we're talking about policing shortages, fire shortages, other city sanitation and everything else. You and I have talked about this for a while. We've known that these things are present. And then I just got to add that this craziness of what Audubon Zoo did the other day, not supporting our police. You know, it had 8 people shot over the weekend, 2 killed. Carjackings, armed robberies. You're working with companies, recruiting them here. They got to be hearing all of this. The Audubon story just broke on New York Post. I understand it's about to break on the New York Times. I think sometimes we've lost our mind here. If we're not willing to stand up for ourselves, what the hell are we going to do?
Well, but here's the thing about the Audubon story that's so disappointing. Right, it's so strange, it's so crazy about it, is that the New Orleans Police Department is a national model. Programs that we have like EPIC, Ethical Policing is Courageous, which is a de-escalation strategy that's taught, is now taught around the country. When there was a survey that was done just recently, right, the 2020 survey, it showed that 57% of respondents are satisfied with the New Orleans Police Department, and it was even by race across black and white. And that number was actually up from, I think, 54% the year before. So, it feels like national opinions and kind of national, kind of far left stuff that's infecting what's happening here, when it's not relevant here. And, the police chief is highly respected by the ranks and liked by the community. And at the end of the day, you want to be able to pick up the phone and call the police and have them show up. And so I am hopeful that this is resolved in a way that is quick and that shows the respect and the appreciation that everybody has for the police, even recognizing that they're not perfect. And they're the first ones to say that there is need for continued reform and efficiencies. But the question of constitutional policing is no longer – you tell me if I'm wrong, Newell. It's not a issue for debate in New Orleans anymore. There's been just a ton of progress and culture change made from almost everything I see and hear from every side of the debate. And, again, tell me if I'm wrong.
No, you're not, because a lot of the reforms that are being requested, most departments have embraced that long ago. Now, are there examples of folks violating that? Of course. It's – we're human. We're imperfect. We do have people that have evil in their mind, evil in their heart. Rooting them out is a difficult thing. If we could project or predict human behavior, Newell Norman and Michael Heck wouldn't be talking on this radio show. We would be traveling.
No, we would. I would. This is a labor of love. I wouldn't change.
No, you wouldn't. Oh. We would both be together on tour talking to others, right?
Talking to an empty room.
Yeah, well, if we had that solution. But this is what I know for sure, and you tell me if I'm wrong, because you're working with companies all the time. They look at the culture of a city as to whether or not the business community, the not-for-profit world, the for-profit world are the biggest cheerleaders for their community. Am I wrong?
No, they absolutely do. And if they don't see that, they tend to stay away.
Sure.
And I think – and it's a little bit more subtle than that. A lot of the companies that are looking about where to expand, like Apple going to Research Triangle Park – they use folks called site selectors, and they're basically consultants. And if you're one of these consultants and you have the choice between offering your company something safe, I don't know, a Charlotte or a Dallas, you know, boring, maybe a bit more expensive, but really there are no question marks about it, versus offering them a community where, you know, it's very exciting, very dynamic, they've got exciting people and incentives and a great diverse workforce, but there are questions out there. What you're going to do, maybe even without realizing it, is you're going to offer the safe choices because, you know, you just don't there's not an incentive for you to offer the higher upside but higher beta choice. And so the essence of economic development, oftentimes people think it's about who can give away the biggest incentives. That's nonsense. That's not real economic development. That's fake economic development. That's putting a Band-Aid. Real economic development is about creating the conditions where people want to invest their capital and raise their family. It's the basics. And if you get the basics right, which on the business side means stability and good workforce, and on the personal side means good safety, good utilities, and good schools, man, then all your problems after that are going to be growth problems. It's going to be, you know, how do we want to grow in a way that's smart and is best for our community? But if the basics aren't right, then it's a real challenge because, you know, I'm good and I can spin a lot, but you can't spin, you know, things like public infrastructure or public safety. It's just too hard.
No, it's either real or it's not. And, you know, you can see through the smoke screens, obviously. These people are professionals. They know what to look for. I have to ask, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but you've just said what you said about the situation with Audubon and hope that it clears itself up. How does that happen? The mayor has said nothing. The council has said nothing. The business community has yet to say anything. And you and I both know a number of people on that board and are very close to a number of people on that board. I don't understand what the thought process is here. You know, we're not going to support you in an overt way, but we're going to support you on the lowdown. I don't need that kind of support.
It's definitely a couple of things. One is there is a response coming, and because I can gauge things. I'm kind of like a Zagat. People come and give me advice and complain to me about things that I have zero control over, and I'm not talking about my family and my marriage. I'm talking about you know, the weather.
Idiots like me, right?
Right. And so, you know, I can gauge that this thing has struck a nerve because my phone and text message has been blowing up since about, you know, 9 o'clock last night. So there is going to be a reaction. But I think it's also happening nationally that people feel like policy and responses are beginning to be driven far too much by the extremes. And there's a silent majority in the middle that generally is silent because they're too busy running their business or raising their family. That's beginning to say enough is enough. We're going to push back and we're going to recenter. We're going to recalibrate. And I'm just my spidey sense says that that's coming. And I think it's a good thing because, you know, at the end of the day, folks who come, I always find extreme ideology or extreme positions to be highly suspect. And it's usually more about power and control than about doing the right thing. So, you know, we'll see how this plays out over the next 24 hours. But I do hope that publicly this is corrected and that the police, which need our support now more than ever, are supported appropriately. And there's also a COVID kind of story here too, Newell, which is if one of the real narratives or stories of COVID was public education and the difficulty of getting kids back to school, you know, I think one of the real challenges there is with teachers and with teachers maybe not feeling supported enough either. And I think that in general, as a society, we have to show respect to these people that go in every day, whether they're first responders or they're teachers or they're police officers or they're firemen, and show them the respect and the gratitude that they deserve because they're not easy jobs. They're not the best paying jobs. At least we can show folks respect, and I think we might get better outcomes.
Absolutely. Michael Heck, as always, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate your time and your insight, and have a great week, my friend.
Thank you. I'll see you for margaritas on the back end.
Not too much tequila. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.